Good afternoon. You're listening to WCBN FM Ann Arbor. I'm T. Hetzel. You've got Living Writers. Today, we have a new show with Jane Smiley and her latest novel, Lucky. I first spoke with Jane back in April 2014, so it was a real joy to get the chance to speak again this May. Here is her short bio from Lucky's book jacket. Jane Smiley is the author of numerous novels, including 1,000 Acres, which was awarded the Pulitzer Prize, and the Last 100 Years trilogy, Some Luck, Early Warning, and Golden Age. She's the author as well of several works of nonfiction and books for young adults. A member of the American Academy of Arts and Letters, she has also received the Penn Center USA Lifetime Achievement Award for Literature. She lives in Northern California. Now, here we go, jumping right in with today's guest, Jane Smiley. Thanks for listening.
Well, Jane, I've loved reading Lucky. Thanks for writing this novel. And you've written so many novels, and I wonder, and so much, just and I wonder, what is Lucky to you besides the latest novel that's out in the world? Because I wonder if each of them you have a feeling about writing. And
yeah, I mean, each one of my pieces of luck, is that each one has been different. And so each one has pulled different feelings out of me, you know. So when I was writing A Dangerous Business, which is the most recent one, I got the idea because I was walking around Monterey, which is near where I live, and I found the buildings that are really well preserved in Monterey. I found them really fascinating, and I thought, oh, I want to find out more about what it was like here in the 1850s. So that was both a pleasure and a sense of curiosity about this specific place. I didn't grow up here. I didn't go to school here. I didn't learn a whole lot about it until I looked it up myself.
But it is your home now. So you have that connection, and it's where you walk. And walking is... it seems to be something that definitely reoccurs. It's a constant within Lucky. And so it seems to be a practice of yours as a writer, as a maker, thinker.
Well, I love going for walks, and I've always loved going for walks. I remember all the walks I went on when I was growing up in St. Louis. And that brings back why I decided to write Lucky, because I have so many memories of St. Louis. And there, I would say, almost all of them are totally interesting. And one of the reasons I have so many memories is that I just walked around so much. I mean, maybe this was an omen, but there was a girl across the street. And when we were four, we just started walking.
And when you were four?
When we were four, and we'd walk down the street, there was a slight slope down the street, and then we just kept going. And finally, and my friend, who was slightly younger than I was, actually was smarter than I was, and and she realized that we were lost, and she climbed the stairs to somebody's house, and I followed her and knocked on the door and said who she was and where we lived, and we were probably 3 or 4 blocks from home, from our houses,
and being that small too.
Yeah, we were tiny. We were
little legs.
Yeah, how did we do that? And fortunately, there were sidewalks. You know, fortunately, it wasn't a dangerous place to be walking, but. That was the thing that I grew up doing, and wherever I lived, happened to be living in St. Louis at any given time, I would take long walks there. And that's just the way it's been. And I would love to be the kind of person who had a horse that could go on long walks. I have a horse, but he doesn't like to leave his where he is, where he lives.
Oh, okay.
So he doesn't want to go on the trails and stuff like that. So I got to do it myself.
So many questions for you. The first one is about the horse. Is that and I've never heard that about a horse. Like, I've heard that horses like to be around the barn where when they're going to be fed. But it's
Yeah.
so interesting that I would think it would be a pleasure for the horse to also be able to go and explore,
No,
especially with you.
all horses are different.
Okay.
Some of them don't like places that they're unfamiliar with.
Okay.
And that's what he is. I've had others who were just willing to walk around no matter what. One of my best memories from when I was about 14 was riding alone on my horse in an empty area in St. Louis. And she was walking along, taking bites of grass, and I was sitting on her back, eating blackberries, sort of one at a time as we walked along.
Also from the bushes.
Yeah. And that, I love that. And I've had a lot of horses who like to go out, but some horses are more spooky than others. They're more suspicious than others. And the one I ride now happens to be one of those suspicious ones.
And you can't know until you get to know the horse,
Right.
until you're okay. I mean, of course it makes sense when you say every horse is different, just like every dog is different, every
Yeah.
human is different, right?
Sure.
It makes sense.
It's more, in some ways, it's more important to understand your horse because it can be really painful if you don't understand him or her and he or she does something really unexpected. So, that's what I've learned over the years about the horses.
But like people,
Well,
too.
that's true.
I mean, I think I say that quickly, so quickly, Jane, because of spending time with your novel, because what the main character, Jo, we'll call her Jody,
Ready?
Jody, who, yeah, the actual like the character Jody, she does a lot of learning and growing because we stay with her throughout her, like we see her whole span of life, basically, a character. And there's parts where I think maybe she's in, it might be after 35 or even in her 40s, where she's, well, it's when she returns to St. Louis and starts understanding, and being with the family more to help once Uncle Drew and Aunt Louise go on their holiday. But she's like articulating this way of learning to grow and understand the people, her family, who she's always loved. And but like grandpa is like if he's irritated, there's a whole section of that.
I think that's something you have to do if you're going to remain, if you're going to remain close to your family, and you have to learn to understand them. All of them, your cousins, your parents, whoever they are, because in order to understand yourself, you have to sort of understand them. And one of the things that Jody learns at about that same time is that she is very reserved, and that this has been a social problem for her. And that was an interesting thing for me. And that's a little bit similar to me. Some of us are introverts,
Yes.
And I would say I'm a borderline introvert because I'll go to a party and I won't have much to say, but I'll be walking around somewhere and I'll see somebody and we'll start yakety-yakking, So why do I chat it up with people I don't know just because they have some kind of funny hat on when I go to a party with people that I do know and I don't chat it up very much. So who knows? But we're all different. That's the thing about horses and about people that has always fascinated me. Everybody's different. And that's also the thing about books. Even if two novelists are writing about similar subject, they're all going to always going to do it differently. And you might like one more than the other, but the fact is they're different. And that's the interesting thing about them, as far as I'm concerned.
Right, right. And thinking about actually, I'd like to go, if you don't mind, I'd like to go back to this idea of Jody as the main character, and who we meet and who we follow through all of Lucky. Why was it important to you to have a novel that spanned her lifetime? And at some point, let's also talk about the epilogue too. But
I don't want to give that away.
Okay, so
talk a little bit about it.
Okay.
But it just interested me. The reason I followed her for such a long time is there were a couple of reasons. One is that I wanted to think about, okay, what if I had been a musician? How would my life have been different? And how would it have changed over the years? Because obviously we all know that the music scene changes.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, the Beatles are still, people are still obsessed with the Beatles, but other musicians have come along, and some have prospered. Other styles of music have come along. Some have left, some have stayed. And I've always loved music, and that really fascinates me about the music scene, that there are so many musicians that are quite original, and they give you a kind of zip, you know, you love listening to them. And they can be very melodic, you know, like Judy Collins, for example. Or they can be kind of rough and weird. But even so, it's interesting, and you want to...
Like Janis Joplin, or...
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So you were imagining because as a writer, there's trends, or there's different swings in the writing world as well, but maybe not as visible as it is in the musical world, or
I would say so, because in the writing world, it's only, even if your book is really popular, it still doesn't sort of overwhelm all the other books. So readers are always just sort of going down their own path, picking the books that they want. They don't get as... I was just watching a thing on YouTube that shows the Beatles doing some concert at some point early on.
And people are trembling.
Screaming and so excited, you know. And I was one of those people who really loved the Beatles back when I was 13 and 14 years old, but I would never have screamed. That would have been very light.
And has anyone at any of your readings, Jane, ever been like fainted in the front row,
not a single one? Though there was a guy who did raise his hand during the question period and ask me if I was ashamed of myself about telling lies for a living. And I thought, uh-oh. But then I just stepped up to the podium and I said, well, let me explain something about willing suspension of disbelief. And then I tried to go on and on and on and on and on until he would fall asleep out of sheer boredom.
You educated him to death.
I don't know, but maybe.
Or at least into silence.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, because that's interesting. Because was it something, I mean, did he know that he was there for fiction? Or what was
he? I think he
lies?
Had a thing either against me or against all novelists, you know. So I don't know. He was not something I ever saw, someone I ever saw again or met again or anything like that.
Right. Maybe he'll have a cameo in some story one day. I don't no. Or, well, today, I guess, is a day in a conversation. But yeah, it's interesting because I found myself in some ways, because we did get a chance to talk earlier when you were on tour through Ann Arbor, and we had talked about the character of the gawky girl in the novel, and how, do you mind if I, well, will you tell us about the gawky girl?
Let's talk about the gawky girl.
Yeah.
So Jody's life, because I wanted to explore St. Louis, I felt I had to explore it in the way that I knew it. You know, I mean, I grew up in the suburbs and there were lots of places to go and lots of things to do, but I didn't know it in the way, say, a sociologist or historian knows it. I just knew it through my own experience. So I wanted her experience to sort of reflect mine. And I decided, since I went to a particular interesting school in St. Louis, high school, I decided that she could go there too. And I had a wonderful time at that school. But I also felt that part of my job was to watch the others. There were some real geniuses in our class, and there were some beautiful girls and gorgeous guys. And there were some people who were very sociable and got along well and knew exactly how to be, you know, at the top of the popularity system in high school. And I wasn't one of those. I was just the one that just kept growing and growing and growing.
Getting taller, right, Jane?
Getting taller, yeah. So I figured that I had to appear, and I didn't want to. So I just made myself appear as the gawky girl. And because I wasn't, you know, as the more I got, the taller I got, and I was never really athletic as a kid. I liked to ride horses, but I was never athletic in any other way. And I thought, well, that's just a fun way to refer to myself. And it'll be interesting to see how quickly the readers understand who the gawky girl is. And that was the fun part.
And what did you, I'm several questions here at once. Was it intentional when you wove the gawky girl back into Jody's life, for example, in Winchester? Or was it you were writing and then it just, that's who Jody happened to see?
I had to think about what sort of things she might like to do, given her love of music. And since I loved British folk music, and that was a big deal back in those days. You know, it wasn't only the Beatles. There were also Joan Baez and Judy Collins and other musicians who had gotten their energy from folk music. And I loved that when I was that age. So I didn't want her to be a Janis Joplin. I wanted her to be on her own. I didn't want her to have a band and all of that. So I gave her a love of British folk music. So that's why she had to go to England. And there we were.
But why did the gawky girl and her then husband have to be in Winchester?
It just happened to be where I was at the time.
Oh, wait. Oh, you mean literally you. So the gawky girl threads are actually you, really. It isn't a character that's sort of you and sort of not you.
No, it's me.
So was that something that is, like, was that fun or different to write?
It was fun. Yeah, it was lots of fun. Because once I named her the gawky girl, I could laugh at her. And B, because You know, I've tried to imagine. I always wanted to be a musician, but I never practiced, so I never made it work out. You know, one of my husbands was a musician, and he kept saying, "Practice, practice, practice for this." You know, but I loved. Our family was very musical. We loved singing. I still love singing, and I always loved music. So I wanted Jody's life to be kind of parallel to mine, and I wanted to be there as an observer
Yes.
of her life.
Which is so lovely because in a way, Jane, you've already said that in high school you were sort of an observer there as
Well,
sort of.
girls are, you know, that's what happens in high school. The girls kind of split up into various groups. And the ones who tend to survive, you know, whatever the bouts of unpopularity and unkindness enough, those are the ones who keep their eyes open, sense what might happen, and who avoid certain things, you know, who aren't pulled in to the whole social melee of, you know, especially middle school or junior high, as we used to call it.
All the raging hormones.
Yeah. And I mean, the only compliment and I put this in the book, the only compliment I ever got in high school was one of the boys in my class looked up at me once and said, "You know, if you weren't so tall, I would date you." And I thought, what a sweetheart.
Thanks. Well, because you mentioned also like these parallels, like as you're writing, as the novel Lucky is developing, Jane, that you have between Jody, that are like your own reflections in life, and you give Jody that one too as being the like watching others,
Yeah.
and because of her
I
reservation.
think musicians have to do that too, because they have to see how other musicians are doing particular tasks. They have to see what's popular. They have to learn from what they're looking at in order to do their own stuff. I mean, Jody starts out as a singer and she does pretty well as a singer, but she then comes to realize that she needs to learn to play an instrument to go along with her singing. And she decides to pick a guitar because she's watching how others play along with themselves and what harmony that gives them and how that helps them. She's not going to be one of those women who ends up in some opera. She has to accompany herself in order to understand the music better. And you know, if I one of my favorite musicians is Marcia Ball, who accompanies herself on piano. And it occurred to me to have Jody do that, but then I realized she couldn't get around. She couldn't
Bring that
travel.
right.
Couldn't travel as much if she stuck to the piano like that. And I wanted her to be an explorer.
Because of the curiosity,
Yeah.
the value of the curiosity that you also give to Jody in this, which is, and I mean, it's so interesting, Jane, because it's how you're talking about like what you value about each of your novels being different. Is that each one is exploring something? There's a curiosity, each one is different.
Well, I think that curiosity, to be a curious person and to be able to be a curious person, those are slightly different because some people, their families don't want them to be curious about things. The families have stuff to hold back. So some people grow up and they're not really allowed to be curious. They're supposed to believe this and that, believe this and that, believe this and that. and curiosity is seen as a fault. But in my family, curiosity was seen as a virtue. And I remember, I think I've said this before, I remember when I was, must have been about 10, maybe, yeah, I think I was about 10, and the World Book Encyclopedia salesman came by our house, and my mom bought it, and she put it in my bedroom, and on the lower shelf of the bookshelf, and I read it all the time, and I would go to the things that I thought I was curious about, like horse, you know, but then that would lead me to seeing, looking at other stuff on maybe three or four pages and stuff like that. Yeah. And I totally adored that. And she always loved taking me to the library. She didn't care what I read. And so she believed in curiosity because she'd been a curious person herself. I mean, in 19, I think it was 41, she joined the Women's Army Corps. And she spent the World War II doing a lot of stuff in Paris and then some stuff in Austria. She didn't have to do a lot of dangerous stuff. She was mostly in charge of some kind of newspaper that they were putting out, or she worked for that newspaper. But she saw a lot of things, and that's what she liked. She liked going to places and seeing things, and she appreciated the same thing in both me and my siblings.
Jane, there's have you written about that, like your mother's life, like kind of following along?
I'd like to, and I go back and forth about it. I did write a nonfiction book that actually sold to Knopf, and I was in the middle of editorializing. It was called Five Mothers, and it was about my two great grandmothers, my grandmother, my mother, and me, and what it felt like, or how motherhood changed over the years. But at the time that it was being edited, and gotten ready for publication, I looked at it and I said, well, this is interesting to me, but I don't see why it would be interesting to other people. Because it's just, you know, these middle-class white women doing what they had to do. And I don't necessarily think that's interesting to other people. So it's sitting around. We'll see what happens.
But because you decided you didn't know if it was interesting?
Yeah, I decided that.
You pulled it back.
Right.
I mean, it's...
And it's also incredibly long. So, because, you know, if you are exploring what your relatives were like, then you just can't shut up.
Right. But don't you think because
to you.
Well, okay, yeah, I definitely I hear you on that, and that's so.
There was nothing dramatic. There were interesting things that happened in my family. For example, my grandmother's mother was an immigrant from Norway, and so there were interesting things that happened in our family, but there wasn't anything dramatic or traumatic, you know, that might make an autobiography more, I don't know, alluring. And I didn't have, you know, one of the things that some people write autobiographies for is because they have events or issues that they have to sort out and understand.
Right.
They were so traumatic. I didn't have that kind of stuff.
You didn't? Not you didn't find like some kind of new understanding or something about motherhood or through the generations that you wanted to say? I find
because all of the mothers, all the mothers in my family were really sweet, were real sweethearts. I mean, I remember my grandmother. I had to get a whipping at some place, and that was the time at some point, and that was the time when whippings were quite common. Mm-hmm. I remember my grandmother taking me outside. I think it must have been about six, and I don't know what I did wrong, but she broke off a bit of one of the lilac branches, and she smacked me, and then she just put it down. She didn't want to do it. And I remember my mom, and I don't know what things I did were, but I remember my mom when I was about five, just putting me over her lap and then kind of giving me one little smack on the ass.
Like half-hearted.
Yeah, like, and I knew people who got real whippings. You know, one of my multiple husbands,
you 4-2 for you, Jane, like the gawky girl. Okay.
Yeah. And he and his brothers had to line up outside the parents' bedroom door. I think it was on Friday evenings to get the whippings they deserved for all the trouble that they'd gotten into over the course of the week.
A whole week.
I think so.
There's like a little tally book.
They were a wild bunch of guys. They were all very athletic, and they lived right by the Mississippi River, and of course they were always trying this and trying that, you know, so they got into plenty of trouble.
Oh my god.
I knew plenty of kids when I was growing up who were regularly whipped, and I wasn't one of them.
But that also could be part of, I mean, I know that I'm not going to convince you to publish, you know, the five mothers, but I think it's also really valuable to hear you say that Knopf bought it, and that you decided as you were having time, like it was away from you, it was somewhere, it could go out in the world, and you were like, I don't think so, because maybe there was something in it for you that wasn't, that was missing. And but I think it's so valuable to hear you say that, because so many people are because I think people would read it because it was you. Because I think because of who you are as a writer, the years that you've written, the novels, the stories, I feel like people then would be interested to hear you writing in this different way and to know more about how you developed. But
if I get bored with the novels, I'll go back to that one. I have so many on my mind, and I have so many that are finished and ready to be published. And
really, yeah. So okay, well, let's talk about this, because how would the writing be? How is the writing different for you when you're writing the novels? And have you felt like different from when you were writing this more like the nonfiction? And have you felt through the years that you're growing and changing, and as a writer, were you also finding ways to challenge yourself? Because I know you said each one is different. So maybe the subject matter, but is it the how of it also different, or the point of view?
Yeah, for sure. Because
that's what you give to Jody in Lucky, is she's always looking for ways to occupy herself with growing the music. And there's so many, I thought reading about that, Jane, was like reading about, I was like, I am hearing what Jane thinks about being a writer as she's talking about Jody being a musician.
Well, you know, I knew when I first started out, and I'd been to the writer's workshop and I'd all that kind of stuff. And I'd been writing, you know, for a long time, but basically I'd been dedicated to becoming a novelist since my senior year in college. But I knew I had a lot to learn. And then when I came up with various projects that I wanted to do, I knew I had even more to learn. So for example, I knew by the end of, or by, let's say, I knew by the time I was in graduate school that I wanted to rewrite King Lear so that we could have Goneril and Reagan's voices in there, because I felt that Uncle Bill had overlooked them and let King Lear yakety yakety yak and yakety yak.
Uncle Bill.
Uncle Bill, yeah. I call him Uncle Bill.
Yeah.
I swiped his materials.
You're close.
It was a comeuppance. But I, you know, I'm very fond of a lot of his plays. And so, you know, and we had to read so many of them when I was growing up that I actually felt kind of connected to him. And I think that's what gave me the sense that, okay, yeah, I can rewrite his stuff, you know.
Yeah.
So I wanted to do that. But then when I was in graduate school, I took a lot of classes in the Icelandic sagas. And I found them fascinating. And I was really interested in, there's a saga called the Saga of the Greenlanders about how the Icelanders and the Norwegians made it all the way to Greenland. And they lived there for a long time. And for most of that time, it was easier to live in Greenland than it was to live in Iceland, because they had more access to nutritious seafood, especially on the west coast of Greenland. And I was really curious about what had happened at the end of the Greenland colony and what had happened to it, where it had gone, how it had happened. But there was no information about that. And so I decided I was going to write the Greenlanders. Well, I knew that if I was going to write a book like the Greenlanders, I was going to have to really learn a lot about writing books. So all of the early books before the Greenlanders, they were a sense, they were about, okay, how do I do this? How do I do that? How do I do this? How do I do that? How do I plot? How do I develop my characters? What kind of attention should I pay to language? And so I really wanted to write the Greenlanders, and I really wanted to write A Thousand Acres, or a rewrite of King Lear. I really wanted to do those. But the other inspiration from Shakespeare was that we could see that he'd like to do all different types of books. I mean, all different types of plays, you know, comedies, tragedies. And I thought, well, if he could do it, I could do it. And that's what I wanted to do. So I wanted to write a tragedy that was A Thousand Acres, an epic that was the Greenlanders, a comedy that was Moo, and a romance. And that was the All True Travels and Adventures of Liddy Newton. And one of the things I remember doing was looking up what a romance was. And a romance in the old days wasn't the same as it is now. It wasn't about falling in love. It was about traveling and exploring, going somewhere. So in some ways, Don Quixote is a romance. It's not an adventure story. So I wanted to write a romance, and I decided that I could use American explorations in the West as a form of romance. And that's how Liddy Newton, and actually one of the books that's waiting to be published is volume 2 of Liddy Newton.
And how did... I haven't read Lydia Newton. Jane, how did volume 2 come to be?
L-I-D-I-E, Liddy.
Oh, Liddy. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, with Liddy Newton, how did it come to be? Is it Liddy had stopped in one particular place and there was much more to say about the Western
romance? Well, it came to be for a very specific reason. I was in Washington, D.C., with my daughter around the time, and she was about 10, I think. around the time of the Oklahoma bombing. And of course, we were all panicked, you know. So I called her dad back in Iowa to tell him, and he was an American historian. And I called him to tell him that everything in Washington was very calm. And then I said, but, you know, I need to write about violence in American history. And the first words out of his mouth, first word out of his mouth was Kansas. And he was an American historian, and he knew a lot. He knew tons and tons about the problems in Kansas in the 1850s. And I always say, and this is just a joke, but I always say that in St. Louis, we never looked at Kansas. We cheered at Chicago, but we didn't even look at Kansas City. But that's just a joke. I love Kansas City. Anyway, as soon as he started telling me a little bit about what had happened in Kansas, I said, that is really fascinating. And I need to write about that. And so that became the romance, where Liddy goes on a journey to a place she has nothing, no idea about. And then because of the various events that happened there, she has to continue her journey, even though she hadn't expected to do that. So that's how it becomes a form of romance. Mm-hmm. And she also has a love affair. It's not a love affair, but she also falls in love.
And that's the first book, volume one, then.
Yes.
And then how did volume two, why was there something, was it just that you loved Liddy, or mm-hmm. Was it more thinking about.
Well, Liddy's one of my, Lydia, the All True Travels is one of my favorite of my books. And I realized it wasn't a big deal at the time. But I liked exploring the various issues that that novel explores. And then she comes back to Illinois. And I wanted her to keep exploring. And so, but she needed something else to explore. She couldn't just keep on keeping on in the U.S. So she needed something else to explore. So I found something else for her to explore. And that was fun too. That was really fun.
How do you find something? Like, is it when you're on one of your walks and you're going through places? Like, how did this one example come to you?
Of what, Liddy?
Yeah. Yeah, because you're like, I found something for her. Yeah.
Well, that wasn't on a walk. That was just, I knew she had to go somewhere. And so I had to pick some place for her to go that wasn't in the U.S.
No, right. No, I'm totally with you on that, Jane. I just mean, how did you decide to pick somewhere for her to go? Like, when you're thinking through things, like, because she could have gone anywhere. But for you, how did you make that decision? As the writer,
I'm not going to say until Liddy comes out, until volume comes out.
Okay, when is that one coming? When is volume two coming?
Still waiting. I think it'll be about 2 years. I think it's all turned in and everything, but we'll see when they finally get back to me. They're going to reissue volume one as a paperback. And then volume two will come out sometime around the same period. So at the moment they're working on how they're going to reissue volume one, and you know what the cover is going to look like and all that stuff. So yeah.
It takes so long once you finish it, because it seems like when did you finish writing this volume two then?
Oh, years ago. But that's what I do. I go back and forth between books that I'm writing and books that are almost done and books that are only just started and all of that. So, but that's okay. I don't mind that. That, I think that's a good way to do it. And
it's a good way of working.
Yeah, it's a good way of working. And you have to just let publishing be itself, because it has to do what it has to do.
It has its own rhythm. or so. Well, what is it? What, because you mentioned earlier that you had, I feel like, multiple books going. Like, what's on the horizon? What are you working on now? Because, yeah, what are you moving among?
Well, I...
Or you can't say?
Okay. I don't really want to say at this point.
Okay.
So the new Liddy book will come out. I did try an experiment, and they haven't accepted this one yet, but I haven't really offered it to them yet. And the experiment was that, I was walking down a trail near where I live, and it was kind of late in the afternoon. The trail's very shadowy anyway. But I heard something behind me, and I turned around, and there was this tall guy behind me. And he smiled. It wasn't that he was threatening, but there was something about him that sort of gave me the creeps. And but it wasn't his fault. It was completely my fault. I think it was just my fact that I was by myself. And it was late in the afternoon. Anyway, the next day I decided that I would use that episode and see where it took me. You know, instead of planning ahead on a particular novel, I would start with that. I would write 1,000, I think it was 1,500 words. No, it was 1,000 words a day. So I'd write 1,000 words about that. And then the next day I'd write 1,000 words more. And oddly enough, the novel came to be called The Trail. And it was both what she saw on the trail, but also a writing experiment in just following a trail to see where it led. So my plan was 72,000 words in, I think it was whatever six in 8 weeks. Is that right? Is 72 divided by six, eight or something like that?
I don't think so, but I'm
no, it's not. I can look it up. I'm terrible at math.
48. I am too. Don't worry. It's okay. But this is interesting.
I gotta do it. I gotta do it. That's who I am. I gotta do it. 72 divided by 6. 72 divided by what? Did I say 6?
It's 12, Jane.
Oh, okay.
So that makes sense, right? Because times two would be carried. We should have known that. We should have.
Yeah, I'm sure that our eighth grade math teachers are totally embarrassed now.
Everyone's weeping silent tears.
Anyway, I decided just to do it 1,000 words at a time but I was going to do 6 days a week, not 7 days a week.
Okay. And why?
So however many weeks it was going to take.
Why did you?
I wanted to take a break one day a week.
And is that usually important to you, or was that part of the experience?
I like to take a break. I like to take a break, but not for it to be very long. And so I just followed the story that I came up with. And I got to the end of the 72,000 words, and I realized I hadn't reconciled all the parts yet. So I put it aside and came back to it, and then reconciled the parts so that it came to an end. And then I pretty much kept it to myself, except that I did send it to a friend of mine who used to be an editor, and she really liked it. So we'll see, maybe that'll come out too. And that will be called The Trail.
The Trail. And I love that you said that you came up with this as an experiment.
Yeah.
When you were writing, well, let's get back to Lucky. When you were writing Lucky, did you have a plot, or how much of the writing were you finding, was it developing as you wrote it? Because you definitely had a setting. It sounds like you chose St. Louis because of memories you wanted to work with of your own, right? So you're making these decisions. And this is all early on, Jane, in your process.
Right. I didn't want her to be like me. I wanted her to be different from me in a lot of different ways. And so she's much more experimental and adventurous in terms of her love life. But she also doesn't want to get married, you know. And, you know, when I was a kid, that's all I wanted was to find that boyfriend who was going to marry me, you know. And she's not like that. She wants independence. She wants to be able to pursue her career. And she wants to explore sexuality in a way that a lot of women in the 1970s did want to do. And not through marriage, but through having a lot of relationships. And so she has a lot of relationships. And that was really fun for me because she got to meet a lot of guys and I got to explore them. And that was fun.
Yeah, there are so many characters that come in and go. And some of them we see as like main threads, like Uncle Drew. And then Brucey is quite comes back, but yes. Or like a not as strong of a through yeah. line. But Martin even returns too. Oh, okay. But no one knows who Martin is yet. Jane, would you like to read like a page or two from Lucky so people get a sense
sure. of
the novel we're talking about?
You want me to start at the beginning or
wherever you want, wherever you want to bring
I
it.
I love the beginning. I love
Let's
the
do
beginning.
It. Okay.
That part of St. Louis history has vanished now. And so I'll just read a little bit from the beginning. When I was 6 and my uncle was 24, he did something you can't do anymore. He took me to a racetrack across the river called Cahokia Downs. That was where I saw horses for the first time. It was 1955. We didn't have a television set, so I never watched Roy Rogers or My Friend Flicka. I had no idea why we were there, what we were supposed to do, but Uncle Drew held my hand, bought me an ice cream cone, walked around when the horses were being mounted, shouted when they were running. After we had been there a while, he handed me a piece of paper and a pencil and told me to circle some numbers. I circled 4, then 2, then 8. He then handed the paper to a man behind a window along with $6. He later told me it was his last $6, but I never believed that. He got another piece of paper back and we went to our seats. We sat quietly, jumped up and down for the race, and then he grabbed my hand and took me back to the window. He handed in the piece of paper and the man counted out his winnings, $5,986, all in 20s and $2 bills. My uncle was grinning from ear to ear. We walked around for a long time. Then we went to the parking lot. Just before we got into his car, he squatted down, put his hands on my shoulders. He said, "Don't tell anyone we've been here or where you got this money. Hide it, save it, and buy something nice someday." He put a folded green pile in my hand. I stuck it in my pocket. And when we got home, just before dinner, I went to my room and shoved it under the mattress. A month later, I remembered it, pulled it out, and counted it. It was 43 $2 bills, the $86 that I later realized would tell everyone where he had been and how he had gotten the money. The reason I waited so long was that the day after we went to the races on Sunday afternoon, my uncle walked in the front door with a puppy, a Cocker Spaniel. He said it was a present for me because he knew I wanted a dog, and I did. Mom and I had no idea how to bring up a puppy.
Thanks, Jane. Thanks. I do love that beginning.
Yeah, I'm very fond of the beginning. I remember going to Cahokia a couple of times, not with my family, but with the horse trainer. who ran the place that I rode, and he had racehorses that stayed there over the winter. So he would, a few times he took us to Cahokia, and that was my introduction to horse racing. So
that's, oh, I love it. But you didn't go with one of your uncles.
No.
That wasn't one of them. Okay. Oh, I love, why the $2 bills? Like, what was?
Oh, that used to be the thing that they did at the racetrack, was they gave out $2 bills. And I don't know, I'd never seen a $2 bill until I saw what somebody, you know, that it was being used for betting. And I don't know why that was, but anyway, that was the custom at the time.
And it's, I love that, because it always seems like $2 bills or 50-cent pieces, they always seem lucky to me. And yeah, the fact that Ben Jody, she keeps these, right?
She keeps them forever, because she thinks that this is where her luck resides. And sometimes she thinks more about them than other times. But, you know, I wanted her to get older and feel gratitude for the fact that she gets to live her life the way she wants to.
Why did you want that, Jane? For this,
that's what I've done.
Because that's what you've done.
Yeah.
Yeah. And was it with memory, Jane? Much of this book is about memories, because Jody's telling the story, or how the novel is written, is Jody's telling the story, looking back, yeah, telling it. And a lot of it is about memory, but there's moments where it's thinking about the grandmother losing her memory, or like there's elements of it.
Her life and my life aren't the same.
Oh,
and
right,
the things that happened to her aren't the same as the things that happened to me. So her memories are things that I've imagined, for the most,
right,
part.
No, but are you using memories? Of course, because only the gawky girl are the elements of you that are actually true in Lucky. But I'm wondering, as a writer, is that what you were curious about, thinking about memory and how memory changes as you're telling a story? Was that part of why you wrote Lucky?
You know, I just am interested. I mean, look at how old I am. I don't know how old you are, but you get to be, you know, in your older years. And
you don't seem old.
Well, I am.
I mean, I'm pretty old, so maybe I shouldn't say I'm not like the decider of who's old.
But one of the things you do when you get to be my age is you think about your past and you wonder about it and are grateful for it and wonder how this happened and how that happened and the things that you found to be just every day turn out not to be every day. You know, so that's when I thought about, and this is probably the last thing I'm going to say, because I have to leave in a minute. But that's what I thought about St. Louis. You know, the things that seemed just totally normal to me when I moved away from St. Louis, I realized that they were unique to St. Louis. And I really was fascinated by that.
And writing Lucky was a way that you were realizing this and being.
Yes. Yeah.
Jane, before you go, because we are at time, but did you want to say anything about the choices made at the very end in the epilogue about, because of the elements of like global change, like we'll say global warming, politics, was that always going to be part of Jody Rattler's, the novel Lucky? Was that going to be the structure?
No, I just was taking a walk once and that came to me and I said, okay, that's what I'm going to do.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you so much. I love that we're ending on walking, Jane. It's where all the good ideas, right?
Yeah, I love them. That's where the good ideas come from.
Jane, thanks so much for talking today.
Thank you for having me.
And hope to talk again soon.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Bye, Jane.
Now, from WCBN-FM Ann Arbor, an hour of programming randomly selected from our archive.